Welcome to Chewing the Yat. I'm Chris Champagne. This is my new talk interview show on WAMF FM 90.3 in New Orleans. We interview the stars of New Orleans. Today we have Philip Melosar, great cabaret performer, man about town, great guy. Hey, Phil.
Hey there.
How you doing today?
I'm doing fine, babe. Where you at?
All right. I'm right here. Chewing the yat, too. Well, you know, we're here in the... We have a portable recording situation, and we're at the lovely Neutral Ground Coffee House, so I don't want to forget to mention that, because that's
Thank you.
That's close to your heart. And you're, so why don't you tell us something first of all. Let's start off with, how did you start as on your way to being a piano bar player, cabaret player? How would you describe yourself? I mean, if you had to, in a,
you know, that's always difficult to do. Yeah. You know, a guy told me many years ago, you know, you're an entertainer, and so I always kind of like that idea. But I'm a self-taught piano player. When I turned 30, I was working on another degree. I was a school teacher, and I went and bought a piano when I got the degree. So and I started banging on it. And then I'll say about, you know, 10 years later, I felt all right about things. And I went out and started hustling little gigs, you know. Played at the Mediterranean Cafe right there at the old Morning Call. And,
oh, wow.
And played at a beignet place out in Harahan and things like that, you know.
So beignets are very important to your career.
Ooh, beignets are very important to my career, yeah.
Well, by now, you've played so many varied venues.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you played...
That's not
everywhere.
Uncommon, though. You know.
Well, that's true. That's true.
So many musicians.
It's a, you have to move on before they get wise.
No. It's good to have somebody watching your back and all these things.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, it is true, though, when they ask you, you know, what is your, how do you describe yourself? I have the same problem. I mean, it's, you know, the best thing I could come up with is I'm a broken rhinoceros in Laurence Olivier's body. And but that's not quite it either.
The horns are very valuable.
Yeah, they are. Listen. Whenever I see people from certain countries, I have to get out. I have to move.
Oh,
I can't. You'd be surprised how many times I've left my meal half eaten. Okay. Because of that.
That's okay. You got thick skin.
Well, listen. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Listen. What are you up to now? Exactly that. Do you have any new plans or old plans?
You know what I do. We just mentioned that. For my piano playing, that I just left the Standard over there, a magazine, and I got a couple of irons in the fire, who knows which will work out? Certainly, I'm at the Superior on St. Charles and Superior Seafood and St. Charles and Napoleon, and there's another good possibility of somewhere. I just mentioned that Charles Aznavour died, but this is kind of what I do. I would do shows, these cabaret shows, and I'd always do them only on people who have died.
Okay.
So several years ago...
So you've been waiting for this moment.
Several years ago, I turned on the computer, and my the news page comes up, and it says, Paul Simon died. And I said, oh, yeah! And then I scrolled down. It was Paul Simon, the senator from Illinois.
Illinois, yeah. The guy with the bow tie.
Ruined my day. Yeah, so shame on me.
Well, you know, those shows that you did of songwriters, I saw many of them at the Mid-City Theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another great lamented venue. And they're just great. And, of course, the last one you did with your lovely wife,
Dusty Springfield show.
Yeah,
that was good. Yeah, enjoyed
it. It was, yeah. Are you doing anything like that soon, do you think? I mean, well, similar to that, I mean...
You know, I have a couple. Well, first of all, like I said, Aznavour just died. And we had done an Aznavour show before, so that might be easy to pull up. Maybe I can just pull it here at the coffee house. I've been thinking with my friend Larry Barone. He mentioned to me Alan Sherman.
Okay,
and
yeah.
So I started looking up some of his material again, and we're having fun with that. We're also, of course, a couple people are interested in Christmas shows, and so...
Yeah. Well, Alan Sherman would be pretty funny, actually.
Because
it's something that's a little, somewhat maybe obscure to some of our younger folks, but still,
yeah.
I'm sure there are a lot of interesting ditties that he came up with that probably have some staying power as far as, I guess things stay the same in some sense, at least societally.
You know what else is interesting about Sherman is that, you know, he's a New York Jew, and his dialect it fits well with the New Orleans,
yeah,
the New Orleans dialect, and so we can have fun with that.
Sure,
kind of
hello
stuff
mother,
too.
Hello father.
Yeah, and a lot of his stuff are
sure
similar in that
yeah.
vein, you know.
Yeah, well, that'll be great. Yeah,
could be fun,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the coffee house. Let's talk a little bit about the Neutral Ground. I mean, it's open every day, right?
Yes, every night.
And it's open to what time, about 7?
7 until 12 or 1.
Describe it for people who don't know about it. Remind the people who do know about it who haven't been in a while.
Sure. Well, this is the old Penny Post Coffee House. Prior to that, it was the Red Lion Bar. They cut it in half, and they made two coffee houses. We were on one side of the Penny Post, and the other side was Bob Barsotti's place. Barsotti did theater and poetry, and we specialized in music. The Penny Post was a true co-op, and this whole place, and anybody that walked in paid $25, you owned it, an equal share of it for a year. And then when I took it over, I'm in charge of it now, so... again, what we do is we specialize in music. It's an old-style coffee house, only open at night. It's free to come in. Every night you have 3 to 5 acts performing. Everybody performs for basically an hour. And who knows what you're going to get. Some of the acts are fabulous. Some of the acts, you can't wait till the next one comes on.
Yeah.
We don't serve any alcohol, so you know families are welcome and certainly come in. And I think, I mean, some of the fascinating things about it is that I think it's the oldest coffee house south of New York.
Really?
Of a coffee house. Again, not a coffee shop.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
And it's also, book more acts than anybody in the country.
Yeah, well, I thought I was going to mention that if you didn't say that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, I come here quite a bit. I sit in the back and I write sometimes because there's comfortable chairs in different places to sit around.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I think that most of the acts are above average, I mean, really and truly. And sometimes, and often, you really get some spectacular people.
Exactly. Sure,
but most of the time, it's above average, I think.
Yeah.
There's lots of, I mean, you know, there's just lots of talent out here. I mean, they're just
not only here, people...
Know? They come through,
They come through. That's right. They can make their little tours, and they contact me months ahead of time.
Right. Well, listen, I'll tell you what, if you don't mind, I was going to... in a minute, we're going to go over by the piano. You can play a few things for us if you don't mind.
Sure, I'll be happy to.
You know, one of the things I remember is I came in here one night to do, like I just said, I was sitting there writing, and you happened to be there, have the hour. And you sat at the piano. And this is kind of before, you know, we've become relatively close friends, I hope, you know, in the last couple of years. But this is kind of a little bit before that. And you know, we knew each other, but, you know, we hadn't really hung around on any personal basis or anything like that. We hadn't done any shows, I don't think, together at that time. And you happened to be in here. And it was the best thing I think I've ever seen here. I mean, you sat at that piano and you did like standards, old standards, and you did stories, like background stories about them.
Yeah.
And it was really a great surprise and just really a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So.
I always liked that. I always liked to be able to go from some comedy things I do, some I picked up from old friend Sam Adams, of course, and some of the things I wrote, but also to be able to mix that up with the old standards, because that's what I... When I started playing, I was 30. That's when I got my piano. So I was 40 years old before I was able to do anything really, and I realized my rock and roll days were kind of over, and I kind of specialized on those old songs.
Well, you do some rock and roll in your, when you do your cabaret, like when you do it, you
know. Till it starts to hurt.
Well, you know, before we go, I jumped ahead of myself a little bit. Before we go to the piano, I wanted to ask a little bit more about the creation part of your career, because I've interviewed, I've just been doing this show for like maybe 2 months now, and I've interviewed a handful of people, and I've talked to some of them about the beginning of how they got started doing different things and the things that they're known for now, and I think that every one of them has really surprised me.
Yeah.
And I think anyone who actually has heard of these people or know these people who listened are probably pretty surprised as well about how it happened. So I think that the fact that you just started when you were 30, I think would be a surprise to many people that don't know.
Right.
And I mean, and you say it took you 10 years before you really felt comfortable to a great degree.
Yeah, pretty much so.
And
I was playing a little guitar before then, you know, I could strum it.
Uh-huh.
But,
you know. And I mean, you're really... you know, an iconic figure here, I think, you know, for your work that you've done. I mean, you know,
I'm getting old, that happens.
Well, there's a lot of people who are old who aren't iconic. If you want to see me, let's just go outside and wait a minute. So don't be so, but you know, and Philip and I have worked together, mm-hmm. Thankfully for me, and done some comedy shows, and he's done, you know, parody songs about current events generally and political figures, and he's just incredible at it. You're just incredible at it. You're just, you know, a very intelligent guy, and you have a good ear for not only music but for just the tone of what you're trying to get across in those things. So it's really been a pleasure to do that, and an honor actually to do that with you, to be quite frank.
Thank you, bro.
So that's true. And well, anyway, let's go over to the piano for a minute here and see what we got. All right,
gotcha.
Well, we're over here now at the Neutral Ground Coffee House with Philip Melanson by the piano, and we're going to play a few he's going to play a few tunes for us. Now, I don't know where we should start, but one of the stories that you tell either sitting around a bar when we're sitting around a bar after the show or during your shows is that the song by the Vice President of the United States.
Oh, yeah.
Can you do that one?
Sure, yeah. Charles Dawes. He was vice president under Calvin Coolidge. He was a guy from Chicago area. Turn of the century. He obviously has a musical training, and he wrote a little melody, and it was called Theme in A. And he became an adult and got into the banking business, and then he got into politics. And then later on, every time he would jump up on the platform, they'd play his little theme for him. Well, anyway, the guy becomes vice president with Calvin Coolidge. And 10 years later, Mr. Dawes wins the Nobel Prize for economics. And then 10 years after that, or whatever it was, he died. Carl Sigmund, who had his birthday last Monday, found that melody and put it to music. Put his lyrics to Mr. Dawes' lyrics. Mr. Dawes' music, excuse me. And it's one of the great love songs of all time. Many a tear has to fall, but it's all in the game. All in that wonderful game that we know as love. You'll have words with him, and your future's looking dim, but your love will rise above. Once in a while he will call, but it's all in the game. Soon he'll be there at your side with a sweet bouquet. And he'll kiss your lips and caress your and your heart will fly away. And you thought that Al Gore was the only creative vice president we had, huh?
That's right.
No.
Well, you know,
Mr. Dawes.
Not many people know that Mike Pence and Joe Biden are at this very moment.
They're putting
night,
on a cabaret show.
They're trying to get together and write a song, okay? To bring us all together. That's right. That's Charles Dawes' greatest hits.
I think so. I think it might be his only hit.
Now, here's a trivia question for you, which you probably could answer at now, because you might be the only person that could answer this question. Who were the only two people ever to have hits on the top 40 charts and win the Nobel Prize?
Dylan.
Yeah, Bob Dylan.
And win the Nobel Prize. Oh, and Mr. Charles Dawes.
Charles Dawes. Now, who are the only two members of Congress to be elected to Congress and have top 40 hits?
Well, that would be Sonny Bono.
Yes.
And the other one would be, now the other one would have to be the guy who was on the Love Boat, wasn't he?
No, he didn't have a song.
Oh, he didn't have a song, no.
Charles Dawes.
Charles Dawes. Was he elected to Congress?
Yeah, he's a congressman too, yeah.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, see, he's okay, a very talented guy.
Yeah.
He was a...
He was from his roots.
He was a field goal kicker too. Cleveland Browns tried to sign him, but he was been dead for 40 years.
I think they got him.
Yeah. They had him for the first game against the Saints.
Yeah.
Well, listen, you want to play I know that Sam Adams was a mentor of yours.
Right.
He just left us maybe about a year ago.
Yeah, and sure did.
And he was a great cabaret performer for sure. Legendary cabaret performer.
Sure was. Yeah.
And
sure
you want to do the Tulane song?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Right. Okay.
Old Sam, man, what a treat.
You have a story about Sam before you start, or?
My gosh, let's see. Which one should I tell about Sam? Sam was the kind of guy who he was kind of truculent about getting to do certain things. But after he signed on, he was there. So we're getting ready to do this show, and he's in his girlfriend's car, and he totals the car. Sam is about 70 years old. The boy's late 60s. Totals the car. He shows up for the show. He did it on Saturday. He showed up for the show on Sunday. We get to do the show. They had just come out with Viagra. I'm working that night at the Pontchartrain, that Saturday night. The guy comes to me and says, "Hey, would you like one of these, Phil?" And he shows it to me, and I know what it is. I saw the advertisement, and I said, "No, man, I don't need that stuff."
Yeah.
But then I think, actually, I could use it, if you don't mind. So the guy gives me the Viagra pill, and I take it the next night to Sam. I put it in a little box, I give it to him. And at some point in the show, we're doing this song, one of his parodies. I found my thrill with the Viagra pill. Go too far into this, but it was fun, and so I said, "Sam, and I have a little gift for you, you know, to commemorate this moment of moment together." The place is, the columns is packed, and Sam gets up. I'll never forget. He said, "Ooh, thank God for let me stand up. I was growing a taproot." And he comes up to the piano, and I said, "Here's a little something for you, Sam." And he unties a little knot and he pulls it out and he sees that pill, and as soon as he sees the pill, he pops it in his mouth. Thank God we were almost finished the show.
Yeah, you're right.
But he was a screamer. Sam was he was just full of energy, and I mean right up to the end that guy was just a real joy. And even though he was a personality, he really loved people, you know, and he was always a pleasure to be with.
Yeah.
You know, one guy you never forgot it, you know?
Right.
And this was one of his great numbers. I tried to take a left on that Tulane Avenue. I ended up around Norco. I tried six times, but the traffic fines, they seem to interrupt my cash flow. From the CBD on out to Metairie, a left turn that just had a beat. Well, I tried to take a left on that Tulane Avenue. I passed up Kenner easily. Seems that everywhere I look, I saw this no left turn sign. And so I just kept going straight. And then the Tulane became the airline. I started figuring I'm getting home late. Well, I kept my indicator blinking, hoping that a left turn might soon appear. Then I found this garden spot. They said you're in Laplace. Laplace? How'd I swim out here? I said, "Now please tell me when you think that I can turn left, my friend. Because I'm trying to get back home to New Orleans." Said, "Well, perhaps it's not yet on our parish map, but AAA, they could find you the ways and means." Well, I tried to take a left on that two-lane avenue. I ended up in Prairieville. At Sorrento, I figured somebody should know, so I inquired there at Guidry's Grill. And Guidry said, I think you take a left turn when you see the sun done set. Well, I tried to take a left on that two-lane avenue. I spent the night in Lafayette. Oh, I'm scared to death. Maybe there just ain't none of them left turns left. It's a U-turn sign. That's what I really need. Now, the state patrol recalled he saw a left just before Lake Charles. He led the way, and then he cited me for speed. Well, I tried to take a left on that two-lane avenue, and I ended up in Phil Platt. I found that tent, and I got home again, but I didn't get no welcome mat. My wife won't believe my story. She packed my bags and she shook her head. Well, I tried to take a left on that two-lane avenue, and my wife left me instead.
All right.
And here's old what's-his-name. Yeah, you know, Sam used to do a lot of stuff on that Jack on that Bob Ruby show.
Okay, sometimes you bring up a name like that. I haven't heard that in a while.
Yeah.
Bob Ruby show.
Yeah, you know? And Bob actually wrote a nice little biography, and he gave quite a few credits to Sam in the biography.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I think maybe there are some spots where you can take a left on two lane now. They ruined that.
They ruined everything. But where you got to go? You know, take a left.
I mean, I was driving in the city today, and it's like I tried to circumvent some construction, and of course, do not enter the next street I had to go to, so I had to go back anyway. I was like, I mean, they got you.
Either way.
You know? Well, when you're doing places like the Parch Train in the state that you just were at?
Yeah.
Do you get a request for that 2-8 Avenue song a lot?
Oh, yeah. New Orleanians, you know, certainly those who know me and knew Sam. You got quite a few calls for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And obviously I can't play that for tourists, people
right.
from out of town. They have no idea.
Sure. Yeah.
But you do. It's kind of fascinating that people, and people of all ages, too.
Yeah.
Because... Yeah, I guess got a kick out of that.
Yeah, it is. You know that. You know that when you were at your last at the Punch Train, I was struck by how many young people would hear you. I'd be sitting in a spot where I could see them walking mm-hmm. outside, and they would hear, and they would come in, and they would sit, and they would seem to enjoy the hell out of themselves to be.
Yeah. You know? And for different reasons. You know, some of them like the novelty songs, and some of them, you know.
Yeah.
We're looking for songs to dance to at their weddings or whatever.
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
it was kind of always like that too. Very much.
And they seem to know the old standards as well.
Oh yeah. I mean, these young people, we always sound like a bunch of old farts when we say that kind of stuff, but I find they're pretty hip. For the most part, we knew them too, though.
You know, one of the reasons that we knew them was because they're like cartoons for some reason. I mean, they would play all those songs in cartoons.
Well,
you know,
you're right.
So I mean, maybe it's the same. I mean, I don't know. Is there are there some songs that you find that people ask for more than others? I mean, I'm sure there must be some that pop out that you get a lot.
Oh yeah. Well, obviously, certain songs that I'm kind of associated with, I'll say.
Okay.
I mean, they do because it's me, but. But of songs that people, I mean, just young people like, I've never understood why people like New York so much.
Yeah.
It's a nice song.
Yeah.
But, you know, unless you're from New York, I mean, what's the big deal,
right.
you know? Or
right.
San Francisco kind of thing.
Yeah.
As time goes by, people like. Of course, particularly old New Orleanians, they are people who really associate with the city. They want to hear New Orleans songs. They want to hear Fats Domino or Toussaint or something like that, you know.
Well, is there something that you like, that you really enjoy playing that, you know, what... Why don't you do one that you really like to do? Any kind of a song. Could be anything. Could be a standard.
You know,
could be New Orleans. Could be anything.
You know, I always tell people, they ask, what do you play when you go home? And I said, you know, that's what I said, I don't like to play it in public, but I really like that song, The Man I Love.
No.
But you know, that being said, you know, I like playing songs that I can relate to. I don't want to sing anymore. She was just 17, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I'll have fun. Sometimes I'll play it just for a kick. But
but it's just not my thing, you know. And I don't want to just be you stick a quarter in, make them play. So I like songs that, in some way, touch me. You know?
Well, can you do one?
Yeah, I don't know if we well, should.
Think of one that if we can go, I ask you another question if you don't want that. I don't like that one.
Yeah, give me another question. Okay. There's so many.
Since Charles Aznavour just passed away today, why don't you play a song from the show that you did about him, one of his songs?
Well, sure. You mind if it's a very slow, but it's a...
Well,
this is maybe the one song that everybody knows, Americans know of Aznavour. He was a magnificent songwriter, and he also was a wonderful... It was in 60 movies, something like that. This is the one song that we know. Now, he fills up stadiums around the world because he wrote in several languages. I, yesterday, when I was young, the taste of life was sweet, like rain upon my tongue. I teased that life as though it were a foolish game, the way an evening breeze would tease a candle flame. A thousand dreams I dreamed, splendid things I planned. I always built, alas, on weekends, shifting sand. Live by night, and I shun the naked light of day. And only now I see how the years have run away. Yesterday, when I was young, so many drinking songs were just waiting to be sung. So many wayward pleasures laid in store for me, and so much pain my dazzled eyes refused to see. I ran so fast that time and youth at last ran out. I never stopped to think just what life was all about. In every conversation that I can now recall, concerned itself with me, me, nothing else at all. By yesterday, the moon was blue. Every crazy day brought something new to do. I used my magic age as if it were a wand, and I never saw the waste and emptiness that lay beyond. The game of love I played with arrogance and pride, and every flame I lit too quickly. And all my friends somehow drifted away. Now I'm alone on stage to end the play. There are so many songs waiting to be sung. I feel the bitter taste of tears upon my tongue. The time has come for me to pay for yesterday, when I was young. Oh man, I tell you.
Well, thank you, Philip. That was a pretty good tribute to Mr. Aznavour, considering the day today.
Yeah.
Passed away at 94 this morning, I believe.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that show you did with of his music, and the other shows that you did. I mean, for those out there listening, I mean, if you had a chance to to go to see one of these shows that Phil and puts together with Heidi, usually now with Heidi Melanson and and other friends. They're really, I mean, if you like this kind of music especially, it's really great. I mean, you can't get something better than this. I mean, because, you know, you did that show about on Harold Arlen.
Yeah.
And I forget the guy's name now.
Well, there's so many.
The young guy from the 60s.
Jimmy Webb.
Jimmy Webb, yeah. Jimmy Webb show, right. Yeah. That was really great. That was really, really great.
Yeah, and I really dug. I mean, that's what kind of got me started, you know, doing those kinds of shows, cabaret shows, pick 20, 25 songs of a composer and do it.
Yeah, I mean, and Harold Arlen's show was really amazing because if you of a certain age especially, the amount of songs that you know that he wrote, you know, and you don't even know that he wrote them unless you pay attention to it.
And that's the case for most of the great songwriters.
Yeah, well, I guess a lot of people,
you know?
I suppose. That's true, I guess. Yeah.
But you're right. It's always a surprise.
Yeah.
But you get an insight into somebody when you hear 20, 25 of their songs. You start hearing certain things that are similar. And
yeah, sure.
The way his views are looking, how he sees things.
Well, I think you can, you know, if you have a relatively keen ear, you can usually pick up that somebody, it sounds like this person because it is. Because there's always something like that in there.
Yeah.
You know,
but I think it's fascinating because they were songwriters. They were not performers, in a sense.
Yeah.
Listen to WAMF FM New Orleans 90.3. on your radio dial.
I mean, is there anybody that you have thought about doing that you haven't done yet? Maybe there's lots of them, but I mean, is there anything in particular?
We were mentioning Al Sherman, and I was mentioning that I was looking into doing a Jimmy Durante show.
Okay.
I'm big on Durante, but I didn't want to wear the nose.
Okay.
You know, I didn't want to do the character, but it was hard to separate the two.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of losing it, you know. I didn't feel like I really could go there with that, but I've always got my list of guys I'd like to look into, and I add a song here or there, and
sure, but. Yeah, but you got to have enough. You got to have enough. I mean, you got to be a special songwriter to do it as well.
Yeah,
I would imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, if you would indulge me, I have a request.
Sure.
Okay, Lydia.
Lydia, sure.
Yeah. For Groucho.
Yes, and for Groucho, and of course, once again, written by Harold Arlen.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
I met my girl at the Slakers. That was in 1922, which was marked down from 1944. Oh, she was more beautiful than Garbo, more beautiful than Nicki Minaj. Oh, Lydia, the girl of my dreams. Oh, Lydia, how have you seen Lydia? Lydia, the tattoo lady. She's got eyes that I adore so, and a torso even more so. Lydia, Lydia, my encyclopedia, Lydia, the queen of them all. On her back is the Battle of Waterloo, beside it the wreck of the Hesperus too. And proudly above waves the red, white, and blue. You can learn a lot from Lydia. La la la, join me. La la la, la la la, la la la, la, la. Oh, Lydia, have you seen my Lydia? Lydia, the tattooed lady. When her muscles start relaxing, up a hill comes Andrew Jackson. Lydia, oh Lydia, that encyclopedia, Lydia, the queen of them all. For 2 bits she will do a mazurka in jazz, with a view of Niagara that nobody has. And on a clear day you can see Alcatraz. You can learn a lot from Lydia. La la la, la la la, la la la, la la la. Come along and see Buffalo Bill with his lasso, a little classic by Mr. Pablo Picasso. Here's Captain Spaulding exploring the Amazon. Here's Godiva, but with tough pajamas on. La la la, la la la, la la la, la la la.
There's Grover Whalen, he's unveiling the Trilon. Over on the west side, you can see Treasure Island. Here's Dudzinski, he's doing a rumba. Here's a social security number. La la la, la la la, la la la, la la la. Oh, oh, Lydia, oh, Lydia. Have you seen Lydia? Lydia, the tattoo lady. She once swept an admiral right off of his feet. When the ships on her hips made his heart skip a beat. And now the old boy's in command of the fleet. Cause he went and he married Lydia. I said Lydia. I said Lydia. Think of songwriters as Arliss was, but he also wrote stuff like, don't know why there's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather.
Yeah, I mean, oh yeah,
it's
no,
just a range.
Oh, absolutely.
It's fabulous.
That's what I was struck by in that show that you did about him. It was really just the whole the array of different songs. And how many of them are just like, you know, so imbued in our culture. I mean, this one in particular is maybe, I guess Lydia is not exactly a standard exactly. I mean, you know, but it's...
In certain circles,
they're
probably going to play it at the tattoo convention they have in the Superdome.
I don't know if... maybe it's lost its, you know, something, because everybody... There's lots of Lydias now. You know what I mean? There's lots of Lydias now, you know. You know, I remember...
The only tattoo I have is when I got vaccinated.
Yeah. I went to see you at the Court of Two Sisters Pavilion, I think is what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And you do shows there sometimes. And you did a Sinatra thing, and you did a deal where you put everybody could vote on which Sinatra song they wanted to hear, and you had to put a penny, I forget. Was it New York, New York?
The song that won?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
No, it was. It was kind of fascinating.
Okay.
So everybody would walk in. I assume many of your viewers or your listeners were.
Some people look at the radio.
We all do as we listen to it.
And many of them are listening to my show.
And we talk to it. What'd you say?
And people who probably listen to my show, I expect those images to come up immediately. But, I'm sorry, go ahead.
But anyway, so as people would walk in, I was thinking about doing a Sinatra show, and it was kind of like a last-minute request for me to do the show. And I was thinking about later on doing a Sinatra show, so I just wrote like 80s Sinatra songs down on index cards, and everybody that came in, everybody got 4 pennies, and you could vote on the song you wanted to hear. And of all the songs that Sinatra sang, which of course are 5 zillion songs,
right here,
which one wins? And you just mentioned New York, New York. Well, of course that would be right up there, but it didn't win.
Thank God.
You know, my way. Didn't win. You know, I could think of so many that were just night and day. They were just huge hits. Summer Wind. But the one that won was kind of... I'll do a little upbeat version of it. I thought about doing a show about this guy, too. Julie Stein, who wrote this one.
Okay.
Time after time, I tell myself that I'm so lucky to be loving you. So lucky to be all that one you run to see each evening. When the day is through, I only know what I know, how those passing years will show, how you kept my love so young. I tell myself that I'm so lucky to be loved by you. I think the reason people like that is that it puts the power, it almost makes you vulnerable. It shows you how vulnerable you are, and that what pleases you so much is that other person, somebody else, loves you. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was fascinating, and no one has ever guessed that song would have won.
Yeah, yeah.
But it did.
Yeah.
It just did.
Well, you know, it's what you just said is interesting to me about when I write things that are more on the touching side, let's say, which is not that often, I guess, but if I do, it really seems that people are really, I don't know, they really crave that, I suppose, that connection, that,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or they're, I mean, you know, we live in such a cynical, I wouldn't say we live in a cynical world, but we live in a world that's, you know, a little more hectic and not the same pace as these songs of that ethos. I mean, it's more of a frenetic ethos, it seems, you know.
It is, but we all watch television and we all get the news on the internet, and it goes fast, and quite often we look at things in a cynical and a very critical way to begin with.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the old line, why do you always think the worst of people? Well, it saves me time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But we long for that connection with people. We long for that, and when you have it, it's golden.
Well, you know, I mean, I guess there's maybe just not enough romance in our lives.
Well,
you know, which is probably true. I guess if you think about it, I suppose. I mean, it's,
right.
I mean, it's,
getting
your oil change is not a lot of romance, but
yeah. But you know, you look at this place here, the coffee house. I mean, you walk in this place and you're taken back, and you go, wow. I've seen a place like this in 50 years, and you haven't.
Well, no, and, right. Well, Neutral Coffee House is where we are, and absolutely, positively. I mean, one of the other definitions of romance is this place.
Oh yeah,
visually,
yeah, yeah,
visually,
yeah, exactly. And
the whimsy of humanity here on the wall and all the little things.
But it's also a matter of people often say to me things like, well, you ought to make it, you know, you ought to make it where you can only play folk music, or they can only play music.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, it's a small place, so you're not going to have a big rock band in here as such. But on the other hand, it has to stay alive. And even though it's in these confines and it has a nice vibe to the whole place, the romance even has to be alive. You just can't sing the, you know, the Sweetheart of Sigma Chi and think you're going to hit again with it.
Yeah.
Well, but some of these old songs can, because they can be alive to you today, you know, and they have to change.
Well, sometimes you'll see, sometimes when I'm in here, I'm surprised by the choice of the songs that some of the younger people choose, and some of those songs are some of these songs.
That's right.
You know,
how often do you think people say, oh my gosh, these young, all the music coming out, the kids today? Well, you know, sitting in the back there, as you do quite often, some of them are very touching. And musically are interesting,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
So
I mean,
there's a lot going out there.
I mean, I guess it's you know, the way that music gets disseminated to a larger audience has changed now, you know, with the internet and, you know, stuff like that, and CDs and streaming and all that stuff. So maybe some of these voices, it's harder for them to get out than it used to be.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
I don't know. I just don't know. You know, this is a question that's kind of interesting to me as a comedian and a satirist or whatever. And I think it's pretty much everybody kind of knows it, that it's getting more difficult to make fun of things. You know, there's only, you know, a few things that you can make fun of now without getting in trouble, and probably nothing, I guess, as far as that goes, because everybody seems to take personal offense at everything,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so as a, you know, you do... You know, when you're doing live shows, you do things that, you know, poke fun at different things. And I mean, do you find it that as well? I mean, you know, I mean, I think I know the answer to this, but
well,
you don't have to get specific. But I mean, you know, or you can if you want, but it's up to you, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? And I do. And I've gotten into trouble with it with the people who own the restaurants or the
bars or and sometimes with the patrons. And you can usually explain it off with people, with patrons, saying, explain that, you know, this is not a mean-spirited thing. But what I attribute it to is this. I do, particularly in the summer, I do children's shows. And one of my bits is in my children's shows is I tell a story wrong. Okay. And the whole deal is that the kids are going to correct me. Right. So I got this thing going back and forth, right? But I have to pick a story that everybody knows.
Sure.
Well, try to find a story that everybody knows, you know?
Yeah, especially the old ones.
Yeah,
nursery rhymes,
you know,
and stuff.
And it's just difficult to do, man. I quite often use Little Red Riding Hood. But it's just that we don't have, because we, you know, those things you watch on TV are not the same things I watch, and the right. things my wife would like to watch, not to mention kids. We're all watching, everything is segmented.
Right, it's diffused.
And it's diffused. And again, we don't have those common things to look at and have fun.
Well, that's exactly where the conversation usually ends up, where you just went. It used to be we had three television networks.
Yeah.
You know, we all had the same experiences, for better or worse. And don't get me wrong, it's much better to have choice and to have more choices and to know more about the world than just a little bitty narrow thing. But at the same time, the society is not as cohesive because of that.
Yes, exactly. Sure. You know, how strong or right that is.
And it's really, I mean, you know, you can say it's good, bad, or indifferent, but that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it just makes a difference. I mean, because you used to be, you could make fun of almost anything, you know, when we were growing up. And certainly some people would take offense, but, you know, but most people didn't take offense. And if there was one person there and all the physics said, come on, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
But now it's like, you know, it's like a federal case.
You know, Sam used to sit there at the piano with a newspaper, bought the newspaper today, and just pick out a story and go through it.
Yeah.
Think of that doing that today.
I know.
Immediately you would.
I know.
I'd
be doing songs about Zai Tune every night.
That's why you're having trouble staying afloat.
That's right. Yeah. Because he won't.
Who's gonna rain and your parade?
He won't pick me up. I can tell you right now. Okay. Now, although I do have. I always carry tire irons wherever I go. So. Anyway. Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, man. Look, I tell you what. You know, it's. You know, you got to be cognizant of what you're saying now, man. You know, you do.
Yeah, you do. You know? You do.
You
do. And sometimes you push it and, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know, man. I just don't know. Well, I mean, I don't know. When it's all said and done, I mean, I'm not going to live as long as Charles Aznavour, so I guess I don't have to worry.
You know? Thank God.
This things change.
For all of us.
Things change. No, I mean, man, 94, he was still.
He was still performing. Last year he was performing, so yeah. I don't know exactly how close. But
man, that's
a beautiful performance too. Beautiful performance, and they referred to him as the Frank Sinatra of France, but he was more than Sinatra.
Yeah,
he was bigger than Sinatra as far as a name, and
he was the Canton philosopher of Madagascar, I think.
No, really.
Okay, no, sorry. I have a weird way of looking at things.
But no, he showed bravery in his convictions, and whether you agree with him or not. He was brave in his convictions, and he put himself out there with things.
Yeah.
He was very admirable in those.
I don't want to take anything away from Mr. Aznavour, but if Bill Gates decided to play the piano tomorrow and went out there and had a nice 50-year career, and not one of his songs was good, he could be really brave, because he's got enough money to buy spaghetti for the rest of his life, no matter what happens to him. Yeah, you know, I think that people in the United States that run a mill people, we know, we probably don't know a whole lot about Mr. Aznavour's career.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
So
yeah.
I'm sure it was, you know, it would probably be very eye-opening, you know, a person who had that long of a career with such a wide scope. But
absolutely.
Mostly but as a French person, we can't look at it that way because we're not French. You know, we're not from
right,
that milieu.
Right.
So I'm sure it's different, you know, for them, you know.
Yeah.
And there are things like that for us that they don't get as well, I'm sure, you know.
Really? They understood Jerry Lewis better than we did.
Well, that proves my point. That proves my point perfectly. You know what? When I was writing the book.
What?
You remember, I don't know if you saw this, I remember that Jerry Lewis was on Johnny Carson one night. Mm-hmm. And he was telling Johnny Carson that he could do that, what he does. So Johnny Carson said, well, okay, why don't you come sit over here? So they switched places. Okay. So Jerry Lewis asked him his first question, and he went, he just screamed, started kicking things, and didn't answer. So that was the end of Jerry Lewis's career as the host of the Tonight Show.
Fun.
Well, I'll tell you what, we got about maybe 4 minutes left. You want to give us one song to run out of here? Now, before you do, we'll be with the great Philip Melanson. And Philip, it's one of the great joys of my life to be friends with you.
Thank you, my friend.
And also
thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome.
It's been a real pleasure also, man.
Well, I appreciate that, too, man.
It really has. Yeah. We don't go back too much stuff, but we don't want to do this both ways. But you've had a fascinating life, and you've done so much with going into different areas with the writing, and obviously your performing, and then the way you put the bread on the table on top of that. So
I steal it. Well, thank you, Philip. I appreciate it very much. I really do. And so why don't you give us a song to we're at the Neutral Ground Coffee House. And what's the address again?
5110 Daniel Street.
5110 Daniel Street, the Neutral Ground Coffee House. Philip Melanson, take it away, Philip.
Well, you could say it's South Rampart Street. You know, it's
South
Rampart.
They changed the name to Confusion.
There's a place for us. Uptown, that's the place for us. Somewhere close to the avenue. Why, Second Street, that would do. There's a club for us. A lawn tennis club for us. We'll wear the Christian Dior design. We'll make our groceries at Langenstein's. There's Perlis, Gentry, Henry's, paying with bad checks intentionally. In Junior League, you're essentially bred to be. There's a bank for us. Oh, Whitey, Whitney Bank for us. On the board I long to be. Why, just like tea, it would be fraternity. We're living uptown. We're wearing the Rex crown. We're uptown. Thank you very much. Keep the cards and letters coming.
Well, we've been with today with Philip Melanson, sitting in the beautiful, romantic, look at the ideas, Neutral Ground Coffee House. And we're on WAMF FM 90.3 in New Orleans. I always forget to say that. I'm supposed to say it a couple of times.
Of course.
Well, Philip, this was a lot of fun, and I really appreciate you taking time to do this.
Thank you. And, I enjoyed it also.
And I hope that everybody goes out and sees you when they can, and they won't be sorry to see you and whoever you and if you like to sing, if Philip is playing at a piano bar or such a thing, you can come out and you can join him for a tune or two.
Absolutely. Come up and I love when people come up and sing.
That's one of the fun things about it.
It really is a kick. I enjoy that part of it, too.
It is, yeah.
I enjoy that, too.
Well, I guess we have to stop at some point, so I guess this is as good a time as any. So I can't think of anything else to ask you that I can say on the air. So thanks again, Philip.
Thank you.
You're welcome, buddy. Thanks.
Listen to WAMF FM New Orleans 90.3 on your radio dial.